Hachette Audio presents I Like You, Hospitality Under the Influence by Amy Sedaris, read for you by the author. This program includes recipes as bonus materials, which can be accessed by inserting CD4 into your computer, Mac and PC compatible.
Dear listener, whether you live in a basement with the income of a 10-year-old girl or on a saffron farm in the south of Spain, the spirit of hospitality is the same. It's the giving of yourself, a present of you to them from me for us. Hello, and I like you. This is what you're saying when you invite somebody into your home without having to hear yourself say it out loud. This audio program is my attempt to share with you something I take very seriously: entertaining in my home, my style. It may not be the proper way, or the most traditional, or even legal, but it works for me. I can't write good, but I can cook even better, and I am willing to share with you my sackful of personal jackpot recipes that, because of their proven success, I continue to make over and over again. I will also show you ways to plan, present, and participate in self-award-winning parties. Even though the word entertainment is commonly used today, to me it sounds charmingly old-fashioned, like courtship or back-alley abortion. I like the traditional idea of entertaining, which for me means lively guests, good food, cocktails, and bubbly conversation. I'd like to bring entertaining back to these essentials. I'm not concerned with proper table settings or seating arrangements or formal etiquette. Who can have a good time with all those rules? I'm not trying to discourage you from being creative or encouraging you to neglect the details, but know that the nuts of any good party are the simple basics provided in a warm environment. I tend to live my life like a deaf person. I communicate with my actions, the way I dress, the way my home is decorated, and the gifts I give all speak for me. I take this to heart when I entertain. My food, my party decorations, the games I create, and the music I play are all personal expressions. This is what will make your party special: sharing a piece of you, a feeling. It's not a competition. You don't have to be the perfect host, just the prettiest. This is not a joke cookbook. I don't like joke cookbooks because I can't take them seriously. This audio program is full of real information. Most of the little I know, I learned from my mom, as well as Girl Scouts and Junior Achievement, my second first grade teacher, my family, Aunt Joyce, the backs of boxes, the lady who works at the post office, encyclopedias, the beach, bartending school, grocery stores, airports, waiting on tables, Mrs. Enchandi, nurses, sitcoms, Hugh, listening to the radio, babysitting, rock concerts, summer school, and the House Rabbit Society. I was also fascinated by two local hospitality shows, At Home with Peggy Mann and The Betty Elliott Show. I wanted to be both those women, and now here's my chance. And hopefully, with the help of my audio program, it'll be your chance as well. Cordially, Amy Sedaris. Dear listener, it occurred to me that I neglected to acknowledge in my first letter that not everyone is interested in hospitality. There is nothing wrong with not wanting to be a hospitable person and have groups of people in your home touching your personables. Luckily, this audio program will also inform you on how to be the perfect guest. From the minute you say, "Yes, I'll be there," until the moment you say, "I'm sorry, I should go," you have an important role in making a party a hit. Remember, one cannot throw a successful party without successful guests. Cordialier, Amy Sedaris. Dear listener, I hate to be a pest, but I was concerned that perhaps in my first two letters I failed to completely convey my passion for entertaining. I go bananas for entertaining. Sometimes, though, I feel entertaining is a dying art. My goal is to encourage you, say your name out loud, to entertain in your home, your style. Having a party is one of the most creative and generous activities that every person can enjoy and indulge in, if you're on the list. Remember, by inviting someone into your home, you're saying, "I like you." Cordialiest, Amy Sedaris. The Art of Hospitality. What a party means to me. For most people, the word party conjures up an image that is so intimidating, so overwhelming, so terrifying, that they just want to skip the whole thing. It's just too much pressure. A party doesn't have to be a big extravagant to-do. A party can be as simple as a few people getting together for conversation and snacks. As my guests leave even my most simplest parties, I consistently hear the same thing. That was the best time I ever had, and it's always me saying it. But I do know in my heart they all feel the same way, probably. I don't even like to use the word party, because often the word gives people grand expectations. So when you hear the word party on this audio program, don't think of pony kegs and loud southern rock, or cigarillos and businesswomen. Don't think of pools and diving for loose change. Don't think about cockfights, even though it's hard not to. Don't think tiki lights and fruity cocktails served in coconut shells on the patio, or a large group of drunken seamen clustered together shouting over each other. Think simplicity, because if there's one thing I am, it's clinically simple. Who am I? Do I ring a bell? When you look in the mirror, what do you see? Well, that's not what most people are saying about you. Before you can give of yourself to others, you must know what of yourself you have to give. Every person is special. In all the land, there is only one you. Possibly two, but seldom more than 16. It's a good idea to know your strengths and weaknesses. Are you funny? Are you a good conversationalist? Are you attractive? Are you? Are you a good organizer? Do you have a lot of plates? These are some of the things you should know about yourself before taking on the responsibility of entertaining in your home. Once they've been assessed, it's important to magnify your strengths and ignore your weaknesses. If you have thick ankles, wear pants. If you're boring, pick exciting music to play. If you're a lousy cook, order out. Never overreach to mask your weakness. There is nothing cute or adorable about noticeably reaching beyond your capabilities. Remember, the goal is to entertain, not overtain. Sidebar. A self-realized person will be unique in a way that is pleasing to everybody, accentuate the positives, medicate the negatives, have a hairstyle that is flattering to some and offensive to few, have access to money, never cry herself to sleep in front of others, learn more about yourself, make a self-esteem collage using pictures of other people you wish you were, wing it, quit your job without any financial plan or backup savings, sleep with someone Chinese, spend a lot of time in the bathtub, disguise your voice and call family members posing as a police officer, suggest that there has been a homicide and then question them about yourself, spend some time at the zoo, record how the animals react to your presence, write yourself a fan letter, put something small in your anus during lovemaking, fly Air India. Planning the party. Now that we've done some self-discovery, it's time to plan a party, and party planning is half the fun of giving a party. The actual party is another half of the fun, and the third half is wiping up and reflecting on the terrific success of your party. But before you start reminiscing about the great party you haven't had yet, let's focus on the great party you're going to have. This is your party. You are the captain of the ship, the cobbler of the shoes, the Count of Monte Cristo. Even if you have slaves, you still need to tell them what to do. The first step in creating a plan is to know what kind of party you will be having. This is often determined by various factors. What time of year it is? What time of day? Is my dealer in town? Do I have a backup dealer? You also need to consider how much you have to spend. How much space do you have? How much time do you have to prepare? If it's mid-August, do you really want the oven on all day? Can you really fit two large ham salads in your refrigerator? A party is also determined by who can come and whether or not you can wrangle someone into doing most of your legwork. Sometimes parties are built around a theme, like barnyard barbecue, siesta fiesta, casino nights, pole potluck, or putting on the Ritz. Of course, your inspiration for having a party can be as simple as desperately wanting companionship. Once you've decided on the type of party, it's time to consult the party log. The party log. The party log may sound more like something you would leave behind at a party after a big dinner, but it is actually a detailed diary of your past parties, an organized scrapbook containing a collection of snapshots, recipes, hits and misses, menus, guest lists, and souvenir items. Before I insisted to myself that I write a book on hospitality, my version of party logs consisted of random lists written on the back of unopened mail, old notebooks, and the palm of my hand. But after doing some extensive research for this book, I decided I loved the idea of an official, well-organized party diary. So I am going to start one along with you. The reason for a party log is simple. There is nothing more flattering to a guest than for a hostess to remember if he likes capers or raisins, prefers pickles to cucumbers, or has allergies to kelp, figs, or poisonous mushrooms. This is all information that can be recorded in your party log. It is a reference tool that helps you plan the next party. I also think it's worthwhile to create a party log because it would be a wonderful item for someone to find after you die. I would buy that at a flea market. Sidebar. Party log sample page. Date, June 5th. Place, my house. Kind of party, south of the border theme. Time, 8 o'clock p.m. Reason, lonely. Guest list. Toby, Jared, Bethany, Warner, Pasquale, Lizzie, Marta, Roby, and myself. Decorations. Hung yellow and black and red streamers and a donkey pinata. Taped two large googly eyes with fake mustache on my door. Music. Played the Best of Mexico, Volume 2. Menu. Appetizer, cheese ball con carne rolled in pumpkin seeds, served with blue corn tortilla chips. Drinks and food, margaritas, cervezas, Mexican colas, avocado salad, taco buffet, Mexican lasagna, and golden raisin flan. Hits and misses, paper plates, bad idea for Mexican food. Cheese ball, big hit, ran out of toilet paper early, ran out of paper towels later. Guest profiling. Toby was highly allergic to Mexican food. Boiled him some spaghetti. Discovered that Lizzie is a lesbian, left with Bethany. Warner outstayed his visit. Found tooth. The guest list. The moment someone says, "Hey everyone, listen to the words in this song," your party is over. This is why the guest list is the most important aspect to a successful party. It's the people that you specifically handpick that make the good times roll. Whom you invite tells you whom not to invite. If you invite a fox, don't invite a hound, unless you're hunting for trouble. If the party is going to be made up of mostly young pretty girls, then you might want to invite some old men. Nothing makes them feel more alive. If you are having a party for a writer, you might not want to invite only other writers. Writers enjoy talking to all sorts of people who intrigue them, like a doorman, a detective. If all the guests have the same kind of job, the result can be geeky shop talk, and that's not a party. That's called a convention. Make sure your guest list isn't always the same. That's a club. If the guest you invite is a shy type, balance that with a show-off, because all show-offs need an audience. We couldn't do it without you. The Barnacle. A barnacle is that one person in your life you can never get rid of and no one else really likes. They elicit sympathy by attaching themselves to you, making you believe that if it weren't for you, they would have nobody. Not true. Invite them when it will be just the two of you, or to one of your much bigger blowouts where they will get lost in the crowd. For every barnacle, there is a shipwreck that they can attach themselves to, at least for the length of the party. It is not wise to invite them to a dinner for six or less. People might lose their trust in you because you felt obligated to invite a barnacle. And that puts your party's good reputation on the line. You should never invite a guest solely because you feel obligated. That is no way to cast a party. Sidebar. Possible guest combinations to avoid. Astrologer and astronomer. fraternity brother, and anyone else. Psychologist, psychiatrist, movie star, and a scene stealer. The newly divorced couple, director and out-of-work actor. A girl, her boyfriend, and his secret girlfriend. Serial killer and drunken teenager. Invitations. The last time I sent a handwritten dinner invitation, I was in junior high, and my mom let me invite 8 friends over because that was the length of the table. We got to eat in the basement because that would feel special, and I made rock Cornish hens, brown rice, Frenched beans, and lemon tarts. The point of the story is this. I usually do my invitations by phone so I can get a response quicker. But the even pointier point of the story is, whether you send a formal invitation, a written invitation, or make a phone call, invitations need to include specific information. Be crystal clear about the time, place, and location of the party. Include enough information so that you don't raise any questions. If you do your invitations over the phone, don't call the same day of the party unless you call everyone the same day. No one wants to be the last thing on your mind. But don't be discouraged from having last-minute parties. They can be fun because of the spontaneity, such as, Ruth made it back from Alaska and caught a smoked salmon. Join us at 8. Leave enough information so that people don't have to call back. Don't make your messages vague. So hopefully I'll see you a couple weeks from yesterday. This is Eyebrow Knitting. What if they get the message a week later or are out of the country? Late in the afternoon could mean morning to some people, especially hospital workers. And does late in the afternoon mean late lunch or early dinner? Whereas Friday, May 13th, 6 o'clock p.m. isn't confusing. Don't ask, what are you doing on the 18th? It's none of your beeswax. This sort of question puts people on the spot. Don't use a speakerphone under any circumstances. Let your guests know if the party is a special occasion or involves a theme. If the people you are inviting have never been to your house, make sure to include simple directions. If it's complicated, include a map. If there's a gate, include the code. Inform them about parking, construction, or gay day parades. An invitation is the first impression your guest will have of the party. So keep it light, congenial, and of course, informative. Always RSVP. I'm what you call a shamagrammer. Because I'm a night owl, I call people back late at night when I know they are not in the office, and I leave my message on an answering machine. I only like to talk on the phone when I want to. The most important thing to remember when putting together an invitation is sometimes the less you write, the more you mean. Hello? This is she. Hold, please. The following are examples of written invitations. The Kelleher's would enjoy your company in their house for cocktails at 6:30 p.m. Saturday, March 6. Dinner to be served at 8 o'clock p.m. on the patio. Please RSVP. This invitation tells me exactly what to expect. I have no questions. I think I'll wear white jeans. We are having a barbecue on Saturday, the 4th of Jalloon, and would love for you to come. The charcoal will be glowing by 2. Bring one of your children. This well-composed invitation is bristling with information, but be careful not to ask your guests to make too many decisions. Be specific about what kind of children you want at the party so that they can easily narrow it down. Jalloon? It's Betty's first AA anniversary. Bring joke gift. Wear low heels because we will be celebrating on the golf course. Excellent. I never thought Betty would stick with the program this long. Go, Betty! When is it? We'd appreciate if you and Gus could come for dinner next Thursday, the 31st. Father Dumbalis and his daughter, Stravula, will be here from Tarboro, and they love ping pong, so I'm hoping that the Schnooks can come to dinner in the evening. Good invitation, but what time is dinner? And do I bring my paddle? Please come to our yard party at our neighbor's house out in the country on Sunday the 18th. They're out of town, so be discreet. It's easy to get here from there. Expect about an hour travel. You can take the 5 train, which leaves at 4:07, or you can take the Moorhead bus, which leaves at 5:08, or you can rent a car. But don't forget the time change. bring a prepared ice cream dessert. This invitation would make an excellent dustpan. Guest etiquette. So, you've been invited to a party. Now what? Accepting an invitation is riddled with responsibilities. Chances are, if you've been invited to a party, your hostess has chosen you for a reason, either for your good company, or in my case, to exploit you. If you receive an invitation, respond immediately. Don't teeter-totter. It's insulting to your hostess. They'll think you're lazy or just waiting for something better to come along. How do you expect someone to plan a menu when they don't know how many people they're cooking for? Commit or decline. If you cannot come to the party, do not cancel at the last minute or give a message to a child to inform the host. And don't bother explaining why you can't attend, because anything after because is bullshit. Never bring along a guest without asking. Of course, a good hostess will be prepared for this inconvenience and will not make the situation embarrassing, even though she is burning up inside. And you most certainly will be crossed off any future guest list. Don't call last minute to see if you can bring a girlfriend. I said yes to this once, had a run out of my door on New Year's Eve, caught the butcher just before he closed, and the girl never showed up. I was frazzled and stuck with an extra steak. If you want to bring something to a party, ask the hostess what kind of wine she is serving and bring a bottle of that. Don't offer to help the hostess in a way that'll slow her down. If someone calls and says, "So, for your party, I was thinking I would love to learn how to boil something. Why don't I try to bake?" I just cut them off. Your party is not the place for others' culinary experiments. Save that for the bedroom. I do not like it when someone brings an unexpected dish, unless, of course, the theme of the party is potluck. One Greek Easter, I was preparing a traditional menu and a guest showed up with unexpected parents and a 3-story chocolate cake. Turtle wins race. Headline news. Guest brings parents. Then what? I would have never served this dessert with my menu, and now it took up valuable counter space, which is always scarce. This guest then proceeded to cut into the cake while I was still serving seconds of my spanakopita. Not to mention, with her parents in the mix, there go the 4-letter words and throwing stars. She and her family took up the whole length of the couch, so my real guest and I spent the entire party in my hallway-sized kitchen. Don't ever come early unless asked. Those last 15 minutes before a party are vital, and for me, the most enjoyable. I love that time to myself. No one wants to be rushed when making a last-minute roux, putting on eyebrows, or waiting for that double whammy you just swallowed to kick in. As a guest arriving at the party, don't enter saying, "I hate Florida," or "I hate my life. I'm so depressed. I almost killed myself last night." Yeah, well, you didn't. Don't set a negative tone walking through the door. Don't go into long, involved stories with a hostess while other people are still coming in or insist on dominating her time. The host has a job to do and you're not the only guest. Don't ask for an outlet to plug a light box into, to show slides of some historic ruins or sundowns or rocks. Don't bring a light box. I had another party where a guest brought over a short film she made and insisted that we watch it right there and on the spot. It stopped the party dead. I had to jump start it all over again. Remember, television ruins a party, unless, of course, that's your theme. As does turning the music down unexpectedly or having the music too loud, which then dominates the room. A guest shouldn't bring over anything that isn't assembled, like raw vegetables with spinach dip served in a bread bowl, a favorite among the lesbians, because this requires valuable counter space, a cutting board, and a knife. Don't show up with raw chicken breast and some mushroom caps, or anything that needs to be put in the oven for a long time, or needs room in the freezer. I like it when someone brings over something practical that they know I'll use, like butter. Butter is expensive and has many uses. I like it when a guest shows up with powdered sugar, light bulbs, or a roll of those heavy blue gas station paper towels. A classy bottle of water is always nice. A roll of quarters, peppercorns, or carrot tops for my rabbit will make me happy. Next time you're about to pick up flowers, think. When reaching for those last-minute, "these will make me look good" dyed carnations, baby breath, and sunflowers, what are you really saying to your hostess? How much thought and effort does a grocery store bouquet require? It's like dropping unwanted change into a tip cup. no regard. They may seem like a charming idea, but truly can cause more aggravation than joy. Actually slowing down a hostess. She has to stop what she is doing, react to the flowers, cut them down, find a vase, fill it with water, which could be difficult because the sink could already be occupied with lettuce or a colander of clams. So, if you bring flowers, bring them already in something. Bringing flowers can be risky because often they don't go with the decoration that the host has already displayed. Maybe the party has a southwestern theme and the hostess has sprinkled cacti around the room, but now you've got blossoms fighting for attention. Don't you dare show up with bamboo. You might as well show up with a turtle. If you must bring a plant, it better be of the five-fingered variety. Flowers are good delivered the day after a party as a thank you. Now that's class. But for parties of eight or more, showing up with flowers can cause a lot of anxiety. If you are asked to bring something, bring it and show up on time. If you are asked to bring alcohol, don't call up on Sunday at 6 o'clock p.m. and ask what time the liquor stores are open. It's like asking someone what they want for Christmas on Christmas Eve. If you neglect to pick up the item you agreed to bring, you may as well not show up. You're better off lying and saying you were mutilated in a closing subway door. At the party, notice if there are ashtrays visible. If not, don't smoke in the house. I don't smoke, but I don't mind if people smoke in my apartment. I just hope that they are courteous enough not to smoke while someone else is smoking so the room doesn't fill up with smoke. Don't take advantage and make it a great American puff-out night. As far as ashtrays go, make sure that you don't use them for anything other than stamping out butts. No one wants to stare at your chewed-up gum or peach pit or wadded-up beverage napkin. Don't be polite and empty the ashtrays. There might be a roach or a tooth or something that the hostess doesn't want thrown out. Don't overstay your welcome. Know when it's time to go. It's always a good idea, especially if you want to be invited to another party, to call the next day and reiterate what a great time you had, or send off a quick thank you note, or even better, a quick check. Nothing makes the hostess happier than a glowing review. Now that you've learned all the rules of guest etiquette, relax and have fun. But remember, no bamboo, turtles, or sunflowers. Sidebar. More party don'ts. Never try to outdress the hostess unless you are the guest of honor or a transvestite. As far as bathroom etiquette goes, number one, no number two. Don't bring your dog. Don't go through the medicine chest, steal toilet paper, or leave with someone else's coat, shoes, or buttons. The menu. As I said earlier, half the fun of having a party is planning the party, and all that half belongs to meal planning. Other than massaging my rabbit or frosting cupcakes, there is nothing I would rather do than plan a menu for a party. Growing up in Raleigh, my favorite part of the local Sunday paper was a section called the mini page, which was devoted to children. Included among the word scrambles and picture jumbles was the following week's lunch menu for the public schools. They would use words like carrot coins and pickle spears. All of the lunch menus would end with cookie milk, as in baked chicken, rice with gravy, green beans, cookie milk. I became obsessed with what foods were chosen to go together, and I appreciated their combinations. I remember thinking menu planning would be a fun job to have. My mother was a really good meal planner. The first thing she thought about after waking up and yelling at my father was, "What will we be having for dinner?" There was always something defrosting on the counter or upside down in a shallow pan of hot water. I used to love watching the old soap operas like Secret Storm or The Edge of Night, because regardless of what drama was going on, the wife had a roast in the oven and it was always about the roast, no matter what the crisis was. A well-planned menu is important because it ties the whole party together. The most impressive trick is organizing the menu so that everything is ready on time and what is supposed to be served hot is hot. You will find that if you can achieve this, your guests will be impressed. Trust me, they will notice. If you have successfully pre-planned, you will just have to add finishing touches by the time your guests arrive, like a quickly heated sauce or a warmed-up vegetable. I like to use Revereware for this purpose. I find that brand is like a camper's tool. It will heat anything up in an instant. I also like to use it for popcorn. Try to avoid using the broiler when people are on their way over because it smokes up the room and can cause the smoke alarm to go off. Unless, of course, that's what you want. I dismantled mine. It kept going off during my grease fires. Before planning a menu, it's a good idea to consult the party log to remind yourself of your guests' likes, dislikes, and dietary restrictions, and to avoid repeating a menu. I wouldn't call a guest and ask if they can eat meat because it would ruin the surprise of what I am serving. And to me, this is like calling someone for their address because you want to send them a card. Why bother sending it? Now they know it's coming. Always plan a menu with your guests' special needs in mind. Are they dieters? If you are serving a dish with sauces, glazes, and/or dressings, you might want to serve those on the side. But do it for everyone. You don't want your dieting guests to feel uncomfortable. Be careful about topping a dessert with alcohol. The last thing you want to do is knock a guest off the wagon with a tiramisu or bourbon balls. If you are entertaining someone with the misfortune of bad skin, stray from serving cranberry muffins or pizza or any other food that might mimic their face. You wouldn't want to embarrass them. Always make eye contact with these guests. They are very sensitive and have low self-esteem. To get them out of their shell, give them a chore. Build up their confidence a bit. This will distract them from thinking about themselves and how bad their skin is compared to other complexions in the room. The menu often depends on the number of guests. If it's dinner for two, I probably wouldn't want more than three things on my plate, two if they are dieting. I have to be careful that I don't make too much unless my purpose was to send the individual home with leftovers. Dinner for four means I need to be prepared for surprises. If it's Friday night and I want a fish dinner, and my guests are first-timers, virgins to my party log, I should keep a chop or two in the fridge in case someone doesn't eat fish. I can always freeze the chop and eat it later when I'm just cooking for one. With six or more guests, plan on do-ahead dishes. Make a dessert the night before, or half-bake a dish and finish cooking it the day of the party. Eight guests mean batten down the hatches, hike up the britches, and pull the table from the wall because now you've got a shindig. For this many guests, I serve cafeteria style, doling it out in the kitchen. For 10 to 14, unless you already own a battleship-sized table, you can rent one along with chairs or go buffet. A buffet means that your guests probably will be standing or using their laps. Serve food that can be broken up with a fork, as knives are awkward. I would steer clear of stews and chili. Things are bound to spill, and this can be a hazard. I once saw a girl on stilts slip on an olive. It's important to make it clear to guests that dinner will be served at a specific time. If I invite people over at 8, it means dinner will begin at 8. The food is ready to go on the table at 8. I do this for three reasons. One, I don't have to consider many appetizers or worry about multiple pre-dinner cocktails. Two, people won't eat and run because as they finish dinner, the party is just beginning. Three, nobody wants to arrive and see the hostess putting a raw turkey in the oven. Don't assume you are that interesting to hang out with. Not to mention that you will be trussed up in the kitchen the whole time, and that's rude. If you can't avoid spending large amounts of time in the kitchen during the beginning of a party, ask a friend to play coctologist and pass out peanuts. I don't normally serve appetizers, but if I do have something out, it is usually one of my famous little smoky cheese balls. Cheese balls are good if you are on a budget, because one can serve a cheese ball while entertaining friends on Monday, spend Tuesday perking up the ball, and then serve it to a different group of friends on Wednesday. They'll never know the difference. To freshen up a cheese ball, merely reshape the ball back into its original form, being careful to cover the gouge marks. Then roll it through the remaining nut shake to mask the renovation. Decorate with a poke or party pick. As you are discovering, planning a menu is dictated by many things, such as the number of guests, the season, the party theme or gimmick, the time of day, the size of your space, the amount of time you have, and the budget. But even with these considerations, there are some general rules you can follow to help you assemble a successful menu that will guarantee repeat business. Mixing a menu by color. As I said, I tend to live my life like a deaf person. I like to plan a menu visually. I try to mix a variety of colors on my plate. If the main dish is the color of a Band-Aid, I would contrast it with beets, tomatoes, peas, carrot coins, or a darker leaf like spinach. You wouldn't want to serve a white fish with white rice and pearl onions on a white plate with creamy coleslaw and rice pudding, unless you were dining with the imperial wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. Think of little ways to add color, like paprika on deviled eggs, chives on baked potatoes, a lemon wedge next to fish, parsley on fettuccine alfredo, or nutmeg on top of a cream sauce. A red onion and pumpernickel croutons will jazz up any salad. Adding color is an easy way to help a meal come alive. Menus by texture. If the texture of the food you are serving is creamy, flatter it with crispy. Crunchy will always punch up soggy, and nothing complements chewy more than crusty. Prickly next to scaly? Not a good idea. And as a general rule, never have bumpy and lumpy on the same plate. Menus by theme. I often plan the menu by theme. That way I have boundaries, and boundaries are good because they narrow down our choices. Sometimes I'll have Country Kitchen Southern Night, where I'll make barbecue ribs, sweet potatoes, southern green beans, and corny bread. Or I'll have Je M'appelle French Night, which might include French onion soup, French fries, French bread, and endive salad with French dressing. It's not a good idea to mix and match different cultural foods, unless, of course, the theme is patches. Menus by flavor. You never want one flavor to dominate the whole menu. Think twice before you serve a tomato soup with tomato salad followed by spaghetti marinara and Bloody Marys for cocktails. That's a lot of acid to drop for one night. It's also not a good idea to have too many strong flavors competing, like serving chicken teriyaki with meatballs and barbecue baked beans followed by a hazelnut mousse. Menus by decoration. Julia Child said never put anything inedible on a plate. I think that was sound advice. Try carving radishes or carrots into cheerful shapes. Or if you are like me and don't possess any whittling skills, you can always melt lifesavers on a cookie sheet and make stained glass windows. Of course, you might have a tough time coming up with a meal that is complemented by an artificially flavored candy. You can also decorate a meal just by changing the shape of your food. If you usually make a meatloaf in a rectangular pan, use a ring pan and make it a meatloaf wreath. Make a roll cake instead of a sheet cake. If you are making something with a crust, cut out shapes with cookie cutters and place them on top. For example, tomahawks for a powwow birthday, or bats and an owl on pumpkin pie for a fall festivity. Shopping. Once you have your menu plan, it's time to go shopping. I find the quote, "Hungry people make poor shoppers," to be quite accurate. That is why, for me, it's a hot, creamy meal, a generous wedge of pound cake, grab the tote, and it's off to the store. Shopping is so entertaining to me because you can tell so much about people by what they buy. When I was a cashier at Winn-Dixie, people would walk up with such telling combinations as a small bottle of vanilla and a frozen dinner. Sometimes the items leave more of a mystery, like lentils and pantyhose. I loved it on that old family TV show, The Waldens, when the mother announced that she was going to make a birthday cake and would go to Ike's store and ask for a vanilla bean, a sack of flour, and a yard of nails. I couldn't fathom how she was going to hammer out that cake. Don't do the bulk of your shopping the day of the party. You never know what a store might be out of, and then you will be forced to either rush to another store or alter your menu plan. When I worked in a grocery store, I love nothing more than watching last-minute shoppers panic. Sometimes, even now, I'll pop into a grocery store on a holiday just for my own amusement. Thank you, lady, trying to buy a turkey on Thanksgiving. And thank you, sir, scrambling to find hamburger buns on the 4th of July and settling for waffles. Much appreciated. Enjoy your burgers and pass the maple syrup, please. It's wise to make a list before you go shopping. I like to make a list, but I never look at it until after I've left the store, and then I test myself to see if I have forgotten something. Another thing I like to do is never ask where an item is. I would rather look for it than hear them say they don't have it. I like that feeling of hope. I don't use coupons because I don't want to bother the cashier, but it would probably be a good idea to do so because coupons equal money. Growing up, I went grocery shopping with my father every Friday night. I learned a lot of tricks, like if you reach far back enough into the shelf, you might be fortunate to find a can that hasn't been marked up because sometimes clerks are too lazy to reach all the way back and change them. If you have a guinea pig, hamster, or rabbit, you can get discarded greens from the produce department for free. If you have a dog, the butcher often has bones he's not using. I wish products still came with presents. I remember buying syrup and there would be a roll of scotch tape with it, or a smoked drinking glass with laundry detergent, or dog food would have a pair of knee highs. I still haven't figured that one out. Tape and syrup make sense to me because they're both sticky, but dog food and knee highs? Is it because that's the point of view of the dog? I also like to see where the castaway items end up. When people change their minds at the last minute and drop the item that they are holding wherever it is convenient. Once I saw chicken resting in the spice section. Nobody's going to buy that chicken now, or the spices it was resting on. I once read that illiterate people shop by the pictures on the package. They might think that a powdered sugar box with a picture of brownies on it promises they'll find brownies inside, or a can of Crisco contains fried chicken or a whole piece of cherry pie. Also, I noticed in some stores that accept food stamps, they lock certain items up, like vanilla and baby formula, so that you have to find a manager with a key to get it for you. When buying vanilla, always make sure the bottles are full. Twice I've gotten home to find the bottles were empty, bone dry. If you know someone who owns a restaurant, you could ask them to order a bottle of vanilla for you because they get it wholesale and it's so expensive. A great gift idea for bakers. Be able to get the most out of what you buy. If I have a choice between something packaged in a box or a bag, I'll pick the boxed item because I can use the empty box later to put cookies in, transport 3 cupcakes, or bury a turtle. I also buy Land O'Lakes butter because I can get a card out of it. If you have the opportunity to go to specialty shops, cheese, greengrocer, fishmonger, bakery, etc., do so. Often the selection is better and the merchant is more knowledgeable, and the food is fresher. Don't forget the American farmer. Farmers markets are where food is its freshest. Going to a farmer's market is worth it for the atmosphere alone. Great accents and people watching. I don't know how fruits and vegetables are supposed to feel when you buy them, but I do know that someone does. If you need to know, look it up or ask somebody who does. I don't. Although I do know two things. The heavier the orange, the more the juice. And a Vidalia onion can be eaten like an apple because it says so on the box. Sidebar. Shop talk. Don't buy fish on Sunday. If you do not work 9 to 5, go shopping 9 to 5. The same applies to laundry. Be considerate. When ordering in a deli, announce loudly how many items you'll be ordering so customers behind you know what to expect and won't be irritated. The same applies in chocolate shops. Government checks are issued on the 1st and 15th, which means crowds of families on these dates. Just keep that in mind. Don't shop from someone else's cart. Buy organic lemons, if for no other reason than because the puckered tips make great nipples to stuff in your bra. Notice in local health food stores how unhealthy the people tend to look. And notice in Healthy stores that when you throw out the word thanks, they hear that and respond sincerely. So if you say thank you, mean it. Cashiers will notice patterns like ice cream at midnight 3 days in a row. The same is true for liquor. Rotate your stores. If you genuinely see something you can compliment your cashier on, do it. It'll make their day. Conversely, if you want to destroy their day, just ask to see the manager. Remember, grocery store butchers always tuck the fat. TCB in it. I love that time before a party when your mind kicks into high gear, like a lightning bolt, and you realize the party is quickly approaching and you still have everything to do and you're still in bed. This is when I'm at my best. Racing against the clock gives me an adrenaline rush that even my dealer can't provide. This manic energy carries through to the party and often ignites my guests. I call this my TCB time, taking care of business. It's important to roll with this feeling whether it strikes you a week or a minute before the party. You will find that during this period, you will have your most productive moments, allowing valuable breathing room when the actual party arrives. When I get struck with this force, I usually start cleaning the house, because not only does cleaning have to be done before a party, it is a mindless chore that gives my imagination the chance to run wild, and it's in these moments that I come up with the same old ideas that will make my party original. For some people, this mindless activity might be a walk, or painting a door, or rocking back and forth at a rapid pace. But regardless, letting your imagination loose is the best part of busy work. I always feel grateful to have a sink full of dirty dishes when I am mad at somebody. It gives me something to do with my hands, which allows me the freedom to imagine all the horrific ways they might catch fire or be set up for a false drug bust that will imprison them forever. I also use this energy to inspire my decorations. I like decorations that are simple and inexpensive. If it's Calabash Seafood Night, maybe I'll put a conch shell in a beach hat and use clamshells for ashtrays. If it's South of the Border Night, I'll get out my tablecloth with donkeys and napping peasants and place a sombrero with a chip-filled brim in the center of a table. I might make flowers out of tissue paper, or cut them out of paper plates and pin them to my curtains and walls, or iron leaves between pieces of wax paper and hang them in my windows. Gift wrap the frame artwork on your walls and rehang them. What's nicer than a wall of presents to look at? For me, a handmade decoration that expresses the theme of the party cannot be beat. Occasionally, when some of my more crafty friends are invited, they will contribute to the party decorations during the party. It makes for a fun party activity. I'm also a sucker for anything with googly eyes, those shakeable eyes that are often attached to puppet skulls or doll heads. I've always said that when I die, I want to be displayed in an open casket with googly eyes replacing my own. Also during this time, I decide what I'm going to wear. I like to think of my outfits more like costumes. Once I step into the role of being a hostess, I want to feel transformed. The perfect outfit will help set the party tone and immediately puts your company in a festive mood. You might want to try on your outfit before the party to make sure it still fits. Your guests should be noticing the rolls on the table, not the rolls on your back. I love aprons. I feel completely naked if I don't have one on. Often an apron can pull a whole outfit together and hide some of the trouble spots. Not all clothes are appropriate for entertaining. You wouldn't want to wear a bikini when pan-frying pork chops, any more than you'd want to wear anything with wizard sleeves or that's flammable when you are serving food on fire, like shish kebabs or cherry jubilee. During my TCB time, I might marinate ribs or pre-roll silverware in a napkin if I'm serving buffet style. I never set the table with valuable silverware because the type of friends I have, I can't keep it in the house. I might also prepare a do-ahead dish or clean the rabbit hay box to reduce that ever-present goat smell. I always start making ice in advance and then tub it. I think it's cheating to go out and buy a bag unless it's specialty ice, such as crushed, shaved, or chipped. Nothing depresses me more than an empty ice cube tray. The point is to take advantage of the energy burst you get from the excitement of soon hosting a party. The day of the party. I never dread the day of the party. I'm eager. I can't wait for my company to arrive. Rarely do I have the jitters, because like a good Girl Scout, which I was until the day they forced me out, I am prepared. I've done all my TCBing, and now I have an entire day to attend to small details and light chores, while still allowing me some time for myself. I take my time bathing, check for lumps, and dress leisurely. The more you've TCB'd it, the better prepared you'll be for unexpected surprises or disasters that are bound to happen the day of the party. Once I had a refrigerator break down on Thanksgiving Day. Luckily, I lived in Chicago and it was cold enough to set everything on the porch. Another time, I had a surprise attack visit from a plumber saying he needed to remove my toilet in order to look for leaks an hour before my guests were to arrive. Then there was a time I planned a party around a Virginia smoked ham from North Carolina, and it never showed up. It still hasn't. I had a run out, and all I could find last minute was a honey glazed ham, which threw everything else off, especially my side dishes. Sometimes you're the cause of your own mishap. One Easter, I put a deboned leg of lamb in the oven and forgot to turn it on. I was too dressed up to notice. I suppose I cared more about how I looked than how I cooked. When I returned to check on it, the oven was stone cold, and inside rested a sagging, uncooked leg of lamb. When a major setback occurs, don't snap your bean. Make a joke out of the situation. Turn it around. Take a snapshot of the rump roast you just dropped and send everyone a copy the next day. Your relaxed attitude will put everyone at ease. During a crisis, it may be a good time to ask a friend to play deputy hostess. While you spend time mopping up the gravy or smothering the grease fire, your newly appointed second-in-command can temporarily tend to the needs of your guests, such as refreshing their drinks or clearing their empty plates. Lighting should flatter your guest. Think mood lighting. Use it to create a magical illusion where your guests look appetizing to one another, but it's not so dark that your guests appear as vague, shadowy figures. You've worked hard to create a colorful menu. Let them see it. Think warm, gentle tones where the result could be, "Hey, lady, can I get you a drink?" instead of, "Lady, can I get you a cab?" Candles cast a pleasant glow, but don't overdo it. You're not hosting a sacrifice. If you use scented candles, make sure they complement the aroma of the food. If you must use overhead lighting, it's a bright idea to have a dimmer. Your music is just as important as your lighting. I often use it to create an atmosphere that will enhance the mood, not dominate it. You don't want the room to feel dead any more than you want it to feel like a roller disco. Make your music selections before the party. The last thing people want to hear before they settle onto your couch with a drink and an appetizer is, "So, what does everybody want to listen to?" Actually, that is the second to the last thing people want to hear at the party. The first is, "All right, everybody, take off your shoes and sit on the floor. We're going Japanese!" If you're going to have flowers, then have flowers. Don't just have one bunch stuck in a glass on a shelf. And remember, not all flowers smell as good inside as they do outside. You will also want to consider the color and style of the flowers you choose. They should complement your theme and decorations. Fill the room with cherry blossoms for a spring soiree, carnations for grieving, and tulips jammed in clogs when entertaining the Dutch. If you are serving cocktails and need some extra room for a blender or beverages, use your ironing board and cover it with a nice tablecloth. I always keep a package of t-shirts handy in case someone is burning up and needs to shed a layer. I have prescription allergy medicine at the ready for those guests who discover they are allergic to lobster claws or stone crab. I keep a box of Nat Sherman colored party cigarettes in my freezer for those people who just want one. The day of the party is also the time when I go around the house organizing my sale items. I may have failed to mention earlier, but I like to make money from my party guests. The money jar, entertaining for profit. As I mentioned earlier, I like to make money at my parties. It all started with my Funny Face Club. I would pencil draw smiley faces on pieces of notebook paper with 25 cents written in the corner and go door to door to sell them. I also collected Coke bottles, set up Kool-Aid stands, sang country songs at the airport, and got rid of people's pumpkins all for the price of 25 cents. Still, to this day, there is virtually no situation that comes up that I don't see a ripe opportunity to make 25 cents. And there is nothing riper than a party. You've got a large group of people, they're liquored up, and they're in a giving mood, and they are confined to your home. Trust me, this involves a lot less legwork than trying to sell pencil drawings of smiley faces door to door. I've come a long way from dragging rotting jack-o'-lanterns into the middle of the street. Today, in order to make 25 cents, my methods are much more refined. They include indoor garage sales, exploiting my rabbit, or selling commercial barbecue sauce repackaged with my face on the label. It is simple to set up an indoor garage sale. Create a display table and make a sign that reads, "Everything must go 25 cents," and you've got yourself a garage sale. I also place an enamel cup on the table with a smaller 25 cents sign on it so customers have a place to drop a quarter in. I usually customize the for sale items on my table to fit my guest personalities. Products could include anything from half bottles of fancy lotion, pharmaceutical goods, handmade items, movies, dish detergent, pot holders, matches, lighters, toothbrushes, motel toiletries, used batteries, shells, postcards, tea bags, and any kind of makeshift container for aspirin or vitamins. For those guests who use the excuse, "I really can't buy anything because I'm traveling tomorrow and I don't want any of this stuff in my bag," I offer my cupcakes. If, after being confronted with a cupcake, they use the excuse, "I'm hypoglycemic," then I get angry. Don't put anything on the table that is not for sale. It's annoying. For larger items, I place a box outside my door. This is usually filled with such bargains as fans, buckets, pillows, vases, frames, pans, handbags, and hospitality books. I personally man the box because it's more about the transaction than the quarter. I try to keep the line moving by putting a limit on browsing, and I'm careful not to be too chatty with each customer. I have three simple rules for shoppers. Rule number one, it has to be a quarter. It can't be three nickels and a dime or two dimes and a nickel. They are not worth the money they are worth. Rule number two, you breaky, you bawdy. Rule number three, you bawdy, you takey. The point is to get the stuff out of my house. Another great way to make money is the instant camera, a must-have for all parties. You can have your picture taken with my rabbit for 25 cents, couples 25 cents apiece. I make souvenir booklets using construction paper, fold them in half, insert the snapshot on the inside jacket, and personalize the outside. And then, of course, I'll laminate a baby picture or other personal item from your wallet, or customize a lighter by wrapping sticky shelf paper around it. First one's free. Guests arriving. When I was a waitress, I learned that the most important position in a restaurant is the host. It's the host's job to welcome the guests, and it is often the first thing the guests see. I like to think of my front door as my greeter. For other people, it might be their butler or a bush. I try to make my door inviting, to try to have it speak for me, since I have a limited vocabulary. I want my door to set the tone and give the arriving guest a glimpse into the festivities. For an autumn harvest, I'll put a squirrel surrounded by cutouts of acorns and leaves with my friends' names on them. Or maybe for April showers, I'll make umbrella shapes and rain clouds using cotton balls and string. Sometimes I'll take the eviction notice off my neighbor's apartment door and slap it on my own, also a good item to have when invited to someone else's home. Even when there is no specific holiday, I have a special knocker and a hand-painted apartment number. Let your door represent you. Once the door swings open, your party has started. This is where your hospitality will shine. Greet each guest with genuine enthusiasm. Give them your full attention. If you are excited, they will be excited. Allow your guests to soak up the environment you have created. There is no need to point things out. They don't need to be made aware of how much work you've done right away. You've got plenty of time to tell them. And don't show it in your appearance either. You must look radiant. No one wants to open the door to a tired, anxious, overworked, raccoon-eyed hostess. It should appear as though you've used witchcraft. The party should seem effortless. If your guests bring a little something-something, make a mental note or discreetly write it down so you can acknowledge it when they are leaving. Let's say Lily brought over ice cream, and I just realized that she has a wandering eye. Now I can associate her wandering eye with the ice cream she brought. I will remember that Lily brought ice cream because I got the scoop on her eye. Simple. If JD brought mushrooms and he has a toadstool-shaped mole sprouting from the side of his nose, make a mental note. This way, if you send off a thank you card, you can be specific. Everyone likes to receive a little feedback on gifts, especially if they put a lot of time and thought into them. A thank you card should feel personal, not like a form letter, unless that's the joke. I recently received a thank you letter that read, "I loved all my anniversary gifts, every single one. Thank you so much. They all mean so much to me as you do. Thank you so, so much." This letter is as vague as my memory of his party. Try and provide a place where people can put their coats once they have arrived. If your place is small, hang them on the shower rod in your bathroom, but be aware of pickpocketers. Or if you toss garments on the bed or in another room, provide a small mirror because girls and certain types of men like to take a quick look-see after they've taken off their coats. When introducing people, try to avoid saying something that could be embarrassing, like, "This is Barbara. She can't have children." Or, "Matt's on mood stabilizers." Or, "Lenny just got fired. He was the promotions manager at Nowell's." Also, try and avoid introducing people by categorizing them, such as, "He's a dancer at Wagtails." Or, "She's in that outdoor musical, The Lost Colony." Or, "He's the guy who found that girl in the well." Give your guest an opportunity to share what they wish to share. Once everyone has arrived, the first 15 minutes are the most important. This often will set the tone of the whole party. You must use constant owl-like behavior in order to monitor how the party is shaping up and intervene when necessary. Occasionally, a party will need a bit of initial poking and prodding. If the energy seems low, work the room. Engage as many people as you can. Bring guests together that you think might enjoy talking to each other. "Alice, you remember Eileen? She was at Riker's the same time you were." Keep the cocktails flowing. Make sure everybody has a fresh beverage and pour heavy. Change the music or the lighting if you feel it will pump up the energy. If your pre-planning is successful, you won't be stuck in the kitchen. Use this time to work the room and enjoy the party yourself. Mingle. It is as important for you to have a good time as it is for your guests. Offer everyone a drink, but don't ask in a way that assumes that they drink alcohol, such as, "Name your poison," or "How about a cocktail?" This might be awkward for guests who don't drink or alcoholics who are in the program. They hear it in a different way. No one wants to tempt an alcoholic. You don't want that on your shoulders. Create your own special drink that can be served with or without alcohol. That way, nobody will know who is or who isn't drinking. It's more discreet, like medication. At the party. As the party hits full swing, it often doesn't matter what you've pre-planned. You have to be in the moment and open for whatever may come your way. If the guests are not ready for a sit-down buffet because they're having a good time, let the party go on. Don't try to control every moment. During the party, you'll want to tidy up as if you were a ghost. Be discreet when emptying ashtrays and clearing glasses and plates. It makes the guest uncomfortable otherwise. Continually check on the bathroom in case there has been a toilet accident. You know who you are, Alice. Don't be a pusher with the food or drink. That's annoying. "One more glass of wine won't hurt you." Or, "Come on, I've seen bigger asses than yours. Have another piece of cake." Or just taste it. Trust me, the eyes are the best part. If you are offering someone a second or third drink, never say, "Can I get you another gimlet?" Just offer to get them a gimlet and don't remind them that they've already had a few. This appears judgmental. However, if it's clear that they've had too much, it's better to cut them off rather than pretend it's not happening and then allow them to stay over and wet your bed. Don't make guests uncomfortable by putting them on the spot, insisting that they tell a particular story or joke or sing a song or say something in a different language. They might not be in the mood. They might not be up for making some sound effects or ready to show their surgery scars. Don't exploit them, although I do. Oftentimes, during a party, people tend to cluster together in one clump. In order to get them to circulate, I'll put a cheese ball in the bedroom to lure some of the guests in an attempt to declump them. If you see someone boring someone else, just be grateful it's not you. If you see someone hogging the conversation, create an opening and try to include someone else. Have something ready in your apron pocket to talk about. My line is, "Yes, paella is very traditional to the Spaniards." Or, "Wasn't that British territory?" If you see a shy person, ask them a question like, "Why are you so shy? Tell everyone, we're all listening." Saying goodnight. As a friend's mother once said about a tree her late husband had planted with tenderness that now stood leafless and brittle, "Daddy's tree, chop it down and drag it to the curb." Thus is the healthy attitude at the end of a party. When it's over, it's over. Pack them up and get them out. There is no point in dragging out the end, regardless of how successful the beginning and the middle have been. The end of the party is no time for sentiment. You'll have plenty of time to reminisce later. For now, it's time to say goodbye. When the time for farewells comes, don't say your goodbyes in the hallway or on the street. The neighbors might be sleeping. Say them once and make them quick. You don't want to encourage lingerers, stragglers, or carnies. Sometimes I'll walk them to the elevator to make sure they've left the building, and I'll double-check the stairwell to make sure they're gone. I don't want them standing outside my door listening to me talking about how they ruined my party. If they brought over a dish, I like to return it that night. If you made money off them, make sure they've paid, and make doubly sure they leave with their on-spot souvenir. Don't start cleaning up while your guests are leaving. Save it for later. I actually love nothing more than doing my dishes after a party because it gives me time to reflect, time to think of the highlights, the lowlifes, the hits and misses, and the person who fell asleep in my bed. If you have the energy, you can make an entry in your party log, count your quarters, or reform your cheese ball for tomorrow night's party. On the off chance that you have children, don't clean up at all. As children, my brother and sisters and I loved waking up early and playing cocktail party with the leftover debris. As you can tell, those were my first steps in hospitality.